Folks, you know what? I don't know if we're on WBCQ or not. I don't know. I don't know if we're on WBCQ or not. I don't think we are. Is this Alan?
Yo.
Okay, we'll do it again. We'll do it again.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, folks, we got to do this again, so just hang on. Well, you can listen to this. What I'm doing is calling WBCQ. I did this a while ago, and we uplinked, I thought. Sometimes it doesn't work. Usually it does. Okay, here we go. Try it again. Okay, folks, so we did it again, and I don't know what happened a while ago. Sometimes that's the way it goes, so we'll start the broadcast all over. What happened, in case you just tuned in, is we uplinked with WBCQ and somehow didn't get linked. And when I started broadcasting, I noticed that one of my lights wasn't lit. And so here we go again. Got it that time. I think what I did was what I normally do is I hit the C switch and then I hang up the phone. And I think what I did this time is I probably hung up the phone and then hit the C switch. And if you do it in the wrong order, then you don't get the phone link. You've got to seize the line before you hang up the phone. And I think I hung up the phone before I hit the C's, but I do it so quick. It's just like almost one action. I hit the C's and hang up the phone. And I think tonight what I did is just backwards from that. But anyway, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm still William Cooper, and we're still here broadcasting. I was just talking to Alan Weiner before we went on the air. He's the owner, or one of the owners, anyway, of WBCQ. I'm really not sure about who owns what. I know Randy probably has a piece of that action, but I don't know who else. And I was just telling him that it was we've been on the air for over 3 years with our local FM nonprofit community service radio broadcasting station. And we were sort of discussing what the FCC is doing. They want to license now, create a whole new license classification for low power and micro FM broadcasting stations, because you see, way back in 1992, I did the research and did the first broadcast that revealed the truth about the jurisdiction of the FCC as far as intrastate broadcasting is concerned. And the truth is, they don't have any jurisdiction or authority over intrastate broadcasting, that lies with the state. And if the state chooses not to do it, then there is no regulation. It's just that, you know, trust you to do the right thing. But by golly, now that that people have been listening to me, see, that was way back in 1992, and I've been repeating it for years, and trying to teach people the truth about the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, which all of these people have to obey. And if they don't, then they're the outlaws, not us. Not us, folks. They're the outlaws. You know, a lot of people have trouble with that. They can't imagine the government being outlaws, going against the law. But they do it all the time. It's the nature of government to accumulate power and overstep their bounds. It's also the human nature of petty bureaucrats to reach out and try to make themselves as powerful as they possibly can. And they think that's doing their job, but it's not. Their job is to obey the law. And so we were discussing that. The FCC now wants to create this new class of license because they know they have no jurisdiction or authority over intrastate FM, low power, and micro broadcasting. They know that. And everyone who's challenged them on those grounds have won. They're still broadcasting and will always be broadcasting because that's the right challenge under the law. All the rest of it is total BS. And so now they're going to create this whole new class of licenses to suck people into their authority. Because if you apply for and accept their license, you give up your rights. And you then grant them authority and jurisdiction over you. Now, all of you who have low power and micro broadcasting stations, better listen to me. Because if you succumb to the temptation to not be hassled by the FCC anymore, you give up one more chunk of your liberties and freedom. And you place yourself once again as a ward of the state under the jurisdiction of Big Brother, where you don't need to be. You don't want to be. Not the nature of Americans to be in that position. And I've got something that I'm going to read to you tonight that I think you're going to enjoy hearing, especially if you're a true American like me. Now, recently, Alan Dershowitz, who is the head of the law department at either Harvard or Yale, I forget which, this is the guy who's supposed to understand the Constitution and freedoms and liberties and everything else. But he's a closet socialist helping to destroy the law, helping to bring down the Constitution and put us into a socialist, new world, utopian government. He's a scam, is what he is. He said, if you call yourself a real American, you're a racist. He says that that term real American means racist. Well, Alan Dershowitz, you wouldn't know a racist if one smacked you right upside the head. And you certainly wouldn't know a real American. A real American is one who subscribes to the principles and ideals upon which this country was founded, created, and riding upon became the greatest nation upon the face of this earth in the entire history of this earth. Those are real Americans. Subscribed to the real principles that freed the slaves, that eventually gave women the right to vote, that created the greatest educational system, community-controlled, state-run, that's ever existed upon the face of this earth until the federal government stepped in and the National Education Association Union took control of the teachers and destroyed it all. The nation with the greatest opportunity for every single person that lives within its boundaries, bar none, no matter your race, color, creed, religion, or anything else. And if you deny that, look at all the supposed minorities who have made it despite all of the claimed handicaps that said that they couldn't. And every year, the people in this country get better despite all of the Hegelian dialectic machinations railed against us to try to pit us against each other. There are true Americans, and Alan Dershowitz is not one of them. And I am not a racist. I despise racism. It is a plague upon humanity, and anyone who's ever known me or listened to me ever in their life knows that. So it doesn't wash. It's just another chink at America, at the principles and ideals which made this country the greatest that has ever existed, and its people the greatest people that have ever walked upon the face of this earth. And I'm going to put all this in perspective shortly. Actually, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to read it from a speech by someone else who did it. I've been doing it for years. But somebody's come along and sort of said it all in one speech that I'm going to read to you. You might want to jot some of these things down when you hear it, so run off, as usual, and get your pen and paper, and I'll be back shortly.
I'm a happy roving cowboy. Let me ride that long trail down to the end where the skies are always blue.
Hear my song as I ride along. I'm just a happy roving cowboy. Herding the dark clouds out of the sky, keeping the heaven blue. I ain't got a wife to bother my life. I'm a happy roving cowboy. Let me make my bed where the farm is proud beneath the skies of blue.
Hear my song as I ride along. I'm just a happy rolling cowboy. Herding the dark clouds out of the sky, keeping the heavens blue.
I ain't got a dime just for spending my time. I'm a happy roving cowboy. Let me sing my song till they call me home to the land beyond the blue.
Boy, have I got something to give to you tonight. It's, I think it's great. It's by someone who's controversial in Hollywood, in the Patriot community, everywhere. Guys come up, he's controversial. James Madison, President of the United States of America, said once, "Do not separate text from historical background. If you do, you will have perverted and subverted the Constitution, which can only end in a distorted, bastardized form of illegitimate government." And that's the truth. And a lot of the so-called politically correct thinking, or the political correctness that exists today, especially in our higher institutions of learning, or at least they used to be higher institutions of learning, I don't think they are anymore, this politically correct thinking, political correctness, is guilty of what James Madison admonished us to be careful and not do. For instance, the inculcation in the black community that their natural enemy on this earth is the white man is a lie. Is a lie. Now, I'm going to say some things right now that are going to make some of the people in this audience very upset. But maybe you need to be upset because you're not playing with a full deck of cards. You went to the poker game with an empty six-pack. And you're playing with a deck that only has one queen, two jacks, six tens, and 14 jokers. And if that's the way you like to play poker, don't be upset when you lose the game, because that's what you're going to do. You see, the condition of slavery has existed throughout the history of the human race on all continents, amongst all peoples. It was approved of under certain circumstances. For instance, if a nation went to war, or a tribe went to war with another nation or another tribe, any captives that resulted from the conflict became slaves. In almost every single culture that ever existed, white, black, Asian, Native American, I don't care what you want to call them, it's the truth. The blacks that were brought to this country as slaves in the early history of this country didn't just materialize on the beaches of Africa in chains. And no white army penetrated the deepest depths of the African continent to capture and bring to this continent slaves. They didn't do it. It didn't happen. Listen to me carefully, especially if you're black, and especially if you've been believing all the lies and propaganda that you've been told to intentionally set you against your neighbor who happens to be white. Blacks in Africa were captured by other blacks in Africa who set out to capture them, to enslave them. Those blacks sold them to slave traders on the coast. Blacks are responsible for the initial enslavement, capture and enslavement, and sale to slave traders in Africa. Not whites, not Asians, not Jews, not anybody else. Blacks did that. Blacks did it because it was a part of their culture. They sold them to slave traders at settlements and slave stations along the coast where such transactions took place. They were generally sold to Jewish slave dealers who then transported those slaves to not just the United States of America, but several places around the world where they were sold to different people. Many of the blacks were sold to Arab slave traders, to Jewish slave traders in the Far East, in China, as slaves. Many of them made their way to the shores of this country and were sold into slavery to white plantation owners, to Jewish plantation owners. And now I'm going to tell you something that most of you don't know, and if you know it, you don't want to admit it. There were blacks in this country who purchased and owned black slaves. It's the truth. And people had better start dealing with the truth right now. You see, in that day and age, slavery was accepted as a cultural phenomenon all over the world. Some nations eventually outlawed slavery. England was one of the first. But in England's history, there were slaves. In the Roman Empire, there were slaves. In Manchuria, under Genghis Khan, there were slaves. In China, there were slaves. In Africa, there were slaves. In Europe, there were slaves. Among the American Indians, there were slaves. In both North and South America, there were slaves. There were slaves at different times in history owned by all different people who have ever lived, by all different races that have ever existed, by all nations that existed in that dim history. And I would venture to say that there is probably a secret slave trade that's being engaged in right now, today, somewhere. I'm not justifying it. I'm not saying it is right. I'm not saying that it's ever been right. But you cannot judge people today by what was accepted at some point in history, because at some point in history, I can show you that all people upon the face of this earth engaged in some of the most terrible, despicable acts that you can imagine, and no one, no race, no country, no portion of the world is innocent. None whatsoever. None. So I want you to think about what I've just relayed to you, and I'll be back, and I'm going to read you a speech that was delivered by Charlton Heston at Harvard, called Winning the Cultural War, delivered to the Harvard Law School Forum on Tuesday the 16th of February 1999. I think that you will find it eye-opening. You will find it logical. You will find it reasonable. You will find it based upon reason. And you will find that it destroys the very foundation upon which this concept of political correct thinking has ever even attempted to rest.
I've been yearning for a little romance. I want to know when you're going to give me a chance. Give me honey, tell me of all. Don't you think it's time? I've been yearning for a sweet embrace. Rub my hair till I'm a total disgrace. Kiss me, honey, make my life evil. Don't you think it's time? Don't want to walk without you. Walking right by my side. It hurts me to see you talking. When we are gone.
touch of my cheek. It thrilled me so much that I can hardly speak. Love me, honey, tell me your mind. But won't you think it's time? I don't want to walk without you, walking right while I'm alive. It hurt me to see you talking with the other guy. I get so warm when you touch my cheek. You thrill me so much that I can hardly speak. Love me, honey, tell me your mind. Don't you think it's time? Oh, think it's time.
Well, my goodness, I got back here just in time. I thought that would last a little bit longer. Sometimes when I play the music, I go and get some water or take a trip to the bathroom or something like that. There's a lot of misconceptions and a lot of bad history being bandied about in this country. For instance, that Abraham Lincoln is a great man in the black community because he freed the slaves. Not true. Abraham Lincoln did not want to free the slaves, said it on many occasions, in fact, said that he would not do it based upon any grounds that had been presented or argued up to that point. He did it. He signed the Emancipation Proclamation only after the North had suffered some crippling defeats. And he did it, as he stated, as a military strategy, hoping that the blacks, once they learned that they had been freed by the Emancipation Proclamation of the President of the United States of America, would rise up against their Southern owners, or would desert the South en masse, crippling the South's ability to create revenue to support the war. That's the truth. In my younger years, I knew a black man who was my best friend aboard the USS Tyroo, SS 416, actually one of two of my best friends. I wrote about him in my book. His name was Lincoln Loving, and his first name was given to him because Lincoln had freed the slaves. He and I had some long, arduous conversations over that. And then finally one night, he told me that he knew all of that. He knew all of that. But he wasn't ever going to give in to it or admit it. And he told me why. He said that blacks needed to believe that their freedom had been an act of benevolence based upon the idea or the principle that slavery was wrong. Even though he understood that Abraham Lincoln had not freed the slaves for any of those reasons, he confided in me that neither he nor any other black person would ever admit publicly to those facts. Now, since then, that was a lot of years ago. I'm 55 now. I was in my early 20s when those conversations occurred. I have since befriended many, many black people who have not only admitted that they know these facts, but have come out in favor of the truth rather than to perpetuate the lie. And I have informed my radio audience on many occasions that the people in the black communities across this country are waking up much quicker and to more of the truth than most of the white community appears ever will. And that's sad because we all need to wake up to these truths together. as one race, humanity. Understanding how those who wish to control us and enslave us again pit us together to bring us to that end. With lies. With lies, ladies and gentlemen. With deceptions. With deceit. With political correct thinking. Isn't that amazing? I find it amazing that people fall for this stuff constantly without ever bothering to check any of it, to ever see if any of it is true. They just blindly accept. Like one day they go to their computer and they get an email that tells them they're being poisoned by contrails that are left behind jet planes in the sky. And they believe it just because somebody wrote it and sent it to them. That kind of thing seems to be and has always been the function of organizations like the Patriot Facts Network. Most of the radio talk show hosts who claim to be patriots, who really aren't, they're rumor mongers. They destroy you with tons and tons and tons of nightly dissertations dispensing disinformation and lies on a regular basis. It's their function. It's Art Bell's lifeblood. And now, a speech given by Charlton Heston to the Harvard Law School Forum entitled Winning the Cultural War. This was presented on Tuesday, 16th of February, 1999. I'm going to read it verbatim with no interruptions, no injections of my own whatsoever. Every word you hear is going to be his until the absolute finish of the speech. And so sit back. Pretend that you are one of these professors that dispenses politically correct thinking to his students, or that you are one of the students who have been so brainwashed throughout your educational history that you believe that politically correct thinking is the only way to think in this world. And then listen very carefully. I'm sure that he disturbed these people greatly. I'm sure that he made some of them so angry that they could barely refrain from jumping up and yelling at him. It's one of the greatest speeches I've heard in modern times, considering the circumstances and the arena in which we live. So now listen as I quote verbatim from Charlton Heston. I remember my son, when he was 5, explaining to his kindergarten class what his father did for a living. My daddy, he said, pretends to be people. Now, there have been quite a few of them, prophets from the Old and New Testaments, a couple of Christian saints, generals of various nationalities in different centuries, several kings, 3 American presidents, a French cardinal, and 2 geniuses, including Michelangelo. If you want the ceiling repainted, I'll do my best. There always seem to be a lot of different fellows up here. I'm never sure which one of them gets to talk. Right now, I guess I'm the guy. As I pondered our visit tonight, it struck me. If my Creator gave me the gift to connect you with the hearts and minds of those great men, then I want to use that same gift now to reconnect you with your own sense of liberty, your own freedom of thought, your own compass for what is right. Dedicating the memorial at Gettysburg, Abraham Lincoln said of America, We are now engaged in a great civil war, testing whether this nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. Those words are true again. I believe that we are again engaged in a great civil war, a cultural war that's about to hijack your birthright to think and say what resides in your heart. I fear you no longer trust the pulsing lifeblood of liberty inside you, the stuff that made this country rise from wilderness into the miracle that it is. Now let me back up. About a year ago, I became president of the National Rifle Association, which protects the right to keep and bear arms. I ran for the office. I was elected, and now I serve. I serve as a moving target for the media, who've called me everything from ridiculous and duped to a brain-injured, senile, crazy old man. I know I'm pretty old, but I sure as Lord ain't senile. As I have stood in the crosshairs of those who target Second Amendment freedoms, I've realized that firearms are not the only issues. No. It's much, much bigger than that. I've come to understand that a cultural war is raging across our land in which, with Orwellian fervor, certain acceptable thoughts and speech are mandated. For example, I marched for civil rights with Dr. King in 1963. Long before Hollywood found it fashionable. But when I told an audience last year that white pride is just as valid as black pride or red pride or anyone else's pride, they called me a racist. I've worked with brilliantly talented homosexuals all my life. But when I told an audience that gay rights should extend no further than your rights or my rights, I was called a homophobe. I served in World War II against the Axis powers, but during a speech, when I drew an analogy between singling out innocent Jews and singling out innocent gun owners, I was called an anti-Semite. Everyone I know knows I would never raise a closed fist against my country. But when I asked an audience to oppose this cultural persecution, I was compared to Timothy McVeigh. From Time magazine to friends and colleagues, they're essentially saying, "Chuck, how dare you speak your mind? You are using language not authorized for public consumption." But I am not afraid. I am not afraid. If Americans believed in political correctness, we'd still be King George's boys, subjects bound to the British crown. In his book, The End of Sanity, Martin Gross writes that blatantly irrational behavior is rapidly being established as the norm in almost every area of human endeavor. There seem to be new customs, new rules, and new anti-intellectual theories regularly foisted on us from every direction. Underneath, the nation is roiling. Americans know something without a name is undermining the nation, turning the mind mushy when it comes to separating truth from falsehood and right from wrong, and they don't like it. They don't like it. Let me read a few examples. At Antioch College in Ohio, young men seeking intimacy with a co-ed must get verbal permission at each step of the process, from kissing to petting to final copulation, all clearly spelled out in a printed college directive. In New Jersey, despite the death of several patients nationwide who had been infected by dentists who had concealed their AIDS, the state commissioner announced that health providers who are HIV positive need not tell their patients that they are infected. At William and Mary, students tried to change the name of the school team, the Tribe, because it was supposedly insulting to local Indians, only to learn that authentic Virginia Indian chiefs truly like the name. In San Francisco, city fathers passed an ordinance protecting the rights of transvestites to cross-dress on the job, and for transsexuals to have separate toilet facilities while undergoing sex change surgery. In New York City, kids who don't speak a word of Spanish have been placed in bilingual classes to learn their three R's in Spanish solely because their last names sound Hispanic. At the University of Pennsylvania, in a state where thousands died at Gettysburg opposing slavery, the president of that college officially set up segregated dormitory space for black students. Yeah, I know. That's out of bounds now. Dr. King said Negroes. Jimmy Baldwin and most of us on the march said black. But it's a no-no now. For me, hyphenated identities are awkward, particularly Native American. I'm a Native American, for God's sake. I also happen to be a blood-initiated brother of the Minneconjou Sioux. On my wife's side, my grandson is a 13th-generation Native American with a capital letter on American. Finally, just last month, David Howard, head of the Washington, D.C. Office of Public Advocate, used the word niggardly while talking to colleagues about budgetary matters. Of course, niggardly means stingy or scanty, but within days, Howard was forced to publicly apologize and resign. As columnist Tony Snow wrote, David Howard got fired because some people in public employ were morons who A, didn't know the meaning of niggardly, B, didn't know how to use a dictionary to discover the meaning, and C, actually demanded that he apologize for their ignorance. What does all of this mean? It means that telling us to think has evolved into telling us what to say, so telling us what to do can't be far behind. Before you claim to be a champion of free thought, tell me, why did political correctness originate on American campuses? And why do you continue to tolerate it? Why do you, who are supposed to debate ideas, surrender to their suppression? Let's be honest. Who here thinks your professors can say what they really believe? It scares me to death, and should scare you too, that the superstition of political correctness rules the halls of reason. You are the best and the brightest. You, here in the fertile cradle of American academia, here in the castle of learning on the Charles River, you are the cream. But I submit that you and your counterparts across the land are the most socially conformed and politically silenced generation since Concord Bridge. And as long as you validate that and abide it, you are, by your grandfather's standards, cowards. Cowards. Here's another example. Right now, at more than one major university, Second Amendment scholars and researchers are being told to shut up about their findings or they'll lose their jobs. Why? Because their research findings would undermine big city mayors' pending lawsuits that seek to extort hundreds of millions of dollars from firearm manufacturers. I don't care what you think about guns, but if you are not shocked at that, I am shocked at you. Who will guard the raw material of unfettered ideas if not you? Who will defend the core value of academia if you supposed soldiers of free thought and expression lay down your arms and plead, "Don't shoot me, don't shoot me"? If you talk about race, it does not make you a racist. If you see distinctions between the genders, it does not make you a sexist. If you think critically about a denomination, it does not make you anti-religion. If you accept but don't celebrate homosexuality, it does not make you a homophobe. Don't let America's universities continue to serve as incubators for this rampant epidemic of new McCarthyism. But what can you do? How can anyone prevail against such pervasive social subjugation? The answer's been here all along. I learned it 36 years ago on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., standing with Dr. Martin Luther King and 200,000 people. You simply disobey. Peaceably, yes. Respectfully, of course. Non-violently, absolutely. But when told how to think or what to say or how to behave, we don't. We disobey social protocol that stifles and stigmatizes personal freedom. I learned the awesome power of disobedience from Dr. King, who learned it from Gandhi and Thoreau and Jesus and every other great man who led those in the right against those with the might. Disobedience is in our DNA. We feel innate kinship with that disobedient spirit that tossed tea into Boston Harbor, that sent Thoreau to jail, that refused to sit in the back of the bus, that protested a war in Vietnam. In that same spirit, I am asking you to disavow cultural correctness with massive disobedience of rogue authority, social directives, and onerous law that weaken personal freedom. But be careful. It hurts. Disobedience demands that you put yourself at risk. Dr. King stood on lots of balconies. You must be willing to be humiliated, to endure the modern-day equivalent of the police dogs at Montgomery and the water cannons at Selma. You must be willing to experience discomfort. I'm not complaining, but my own decades of social activism have taken their toll on me. Now let me tell you a story. A few years back, I heard about a rapper named Ice-T who was selling a CD called Cop Killer, celebrating ambushing and murdering police officers. It was being marketed by none other than Time Warner, the biggest entertainment conglomerate in the world. Police across the country were outraged, and rightfully so. At least one had been murdered. But Time Warner was stonewalling because the CD was a cash cow for them, and the media were tiptoeing around it because the rapper was black. I heard Time Warner had a stockholders meeting scheduled in Beverly Hills. I owned some shares at the time, so I decided to attend. What I did there was against the advice of my family and colleagues. I asked for the floor. To a hushed room of 1,000 average American stockholders, I simply read the full lyrics of Cop Killer, every vicious, vulgar, instructional word. I got my 12-gauge sawed off. I got my headlines turned off. I'm about to bust some shots off. I'm about to dust some cops off. It got worse. A lot worse. I won't read the rest of it to you, but trust me, the room was a sea of shocked, frozen, blanched faces. The Time Warner executives squirmed in their chairs and stared at their shoes. They hated me for that. Then I delivered another volley of sick lyric brimming with racist filth, where Ice-T fantasizes about sodomizing 2 12-year-old nieces of Al and Tipper Gore. She pushed her butt against mine. Well, I won't do to you here what I did to them. Let's just say I left the room in echoing silence. When I read the lyrics to the waiting press corps, one of them said, "We can't print that." "I know," I replied, "but Time Warner's selling it." 2 months later, Time Warner terminated Ice-T's contract. I'll never be offered another film by Warners or get a good review from Time magazine. But disobedience means you must be willing to act, not just talk. When a mugger sues his elderly victim for defending herself, jam the switchboard of the district attorney's office. When your university is pressured to lower standards until 80% of the students graduate with honors, choke the halls of the Board of Regents. When an 8-year-old boy pecks a girl's cheek on the playground and gets hauled into court for sexual harassment, march on that school and block its doorways. When someone you elected is seduced by political power and betrays you, petition them, oust them, banish them. When Time magazine's cover portrays millennium nuts as deranged, crazy Christians holding a cross as it did last month, boycott their magazine and the products it advertises. So that this nation may long endure, I urge you to follow in the hallowed footsteps of the great disobediences of history that freed exiles, founded religions, defeated tyrants, and yes, in the hands of an aroused rabble in arms and a few great men, by God's grace, built this country. If Dr. King were here, I think he would agree. Thank you. the great Connie Francis. You don't hear that music anymore. Unless you live in the Round Valley of Arizona, you hear it 24 hours a day. Every day, 7 days a week. Every day of every month. Every month of every year. Only the very best. Of the very best music of all the generations gone by. Don't forget, folks, our annual sale begins March the 15th. March the 15th. Now, if you haven't got one of our catalogs, send for it now. Send $1 and a self-addressed stamped envelope, large envelope, with 75 cents postage on it. That's $1 and a large envelope with 75 cents postage on it. And we'll send you our catalog. And basically, here's what you got to remember. All books are 25% off. All books. All you have to determine is whether you're a member or a non-member and deduct 25% from your price and send it in. And believe me, we know if you're a member or a non-member, so don't try any hanky-panky there, as some people do once in a while. That's all books, even the collector's edition of Oklahoma City Day One. And yes, we still have some left. All videotapes and audiotapes, including the Mystery Babylon series. All videotapes and audiotapes, including the Mystery Babylon series, are 40% off. 40% off. If there's something else that you're interested in that we offer that I haven't covered here, call me between 12 noon and 5 p.m. our time. That's Mountain Standard Time. And I'll help you out with that personally. Now, we also have two other things that we're offering right now that normally will cost you an arm and a leg. We have the Bearcat 147 XLT. That's the Bearcat 147 XLT, which is a 300-channel programmable base scanner with trunk tracker technology. It's a continuous band coverage from 29 to 956 megahertz, including 800 and 900 megahertz, and I must warn you that it's illegal to listen to telephone conversations on those frequencies. It has 10 banks with 10 priority channels, programmable search mode and turbo scan, trunk scan, search, lockout, and delay. One touch weather alert, built-in CTCSS, RS-232 C-port. The suggested retail price is $399.95. You can get it from us for $250. $250. $250. Remember, folks, we only take blank money orders, cash, gold or silver coin. Nothing else. We also have 300-channel programmable handheld trunk tracker scanner, which is the Bearcat 235 XLT, which sells for $499.95. That's the suggested retail. And believe me, it sells for that. It sells for less in some places. But you can't find it for what we're giving it to you for. It is a 300-channel programmable handheld trunk tracker scanner, the Bearcat 235 XLT, trunk scan, search, lockout, and delay, covers from 29 to 956 megahertz, 12 bands, including aircraft and 800 megahertz, and I must caution you again, it is illegal to listen to telephone conversations on the 800 megahertz band. It has pre-programmed service search, programmable search mode, full frequency LCD display, two rechargeable NiCad battery packs, and a charging cradle. $250. $250. Now that means you can listen to all of these broadcasts and all of these radio transmissions that you normally would not be able to listen to. because it's a trunk tracker scanner. Both of these are. Now, think about that. Think about what it means. And then order your own, whichever you want, either the handheld or the base unit. We've got them just for you. You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. After this short break, folks, we'll come back and we'll take your phone calls for the entire last hour of the program.
Judy, 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 Papa Judy.
Oh, Judy!
I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. Well, Annie just came in and corrected me on the postage that you need to put on the large envelope if you want one of our catalogs. It's got to be 77 cents. 77 cents, folks. I guess that's because of the new postage rate change. Number is 520-333-4578. We'll be taking your calls for the rest of the broadcast. It's 520-333-4578.
Good evening, Bill.
Hello.
That was a pretty good speech you read tonight by Mr. Hudson. I'm rather shocked because after he appeared on 60 Minutes, I had called your program, and I had protested vehemently about his use of the word substitution of the word democracy for republic in Ben Franklin's famous quote as he was leaving Constitutional Hall in Philadelphia. He was asked by the journalist, "Sir, what have you brought us this day?" And he replies, "A republic if you can keep it." I don't know if you remember that particular call.
Yes, I do. That's why I prefaced the reading of the speech with the fact that he's controversial even in the patriot community.
Yes, he is. I agree wholeheartedly. I still don't think that was much. That was a mistake, but I could be wrong. I wasn't there. So, anyways, while you're reading that, I happened upon the Harvard Salient. It is a web document. I'm sure it's also a paper publication as well. But in it, what I find interesting is they have editorials from two staff writers. One about the Charlton Heston speech, where they do agree with everything he says. Now this is a Harvard publication now.
Yeah.
And they also have a commentary on Alan Dershowitz's book or something that he's done, and they pretty much say he's wrong in his assumptions about the Constitution and the reason why he had to defend Clinton like he did, for his lying escapades.
Well, that's a breath of fresh air. Maybe student America is beginning to wake up, and as usual, maybe it's being led by Harvard students.
You know, I really do think that could be part of it, because, it's a little more than highly coincidental. I would hope, anyway.
Yeah, that could have been prompted by Charlton Heston's speech, too.
That, well, very that, well, very well may have. So.
But either way, it's a step in the right direction, and it's a pretty big step, as a matter of fact.
Yes, it sounds promising, and you're one who has brought it forth out in the land, I should say, and I've listened to you every night since probably '93, and. I'm glad you're out there, and I tell everybody about you, and, you know, they hate me for it, but, you know, hey, you know, one of these days, you know, who knows, they might catch on, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, thank you.
But on another note, I don't want to take up too much time. You've mentioned in the past about, you know, some of your technology there as far as your radio link and everything like you did tonight.
Yeah.
One of these nights, could you go over some of like your equipment and, you know, sort of like you did with your webpage and.
Well, in the first place, it's not mine. I just manage the studio, and I donate my time for nothing, because the radio studio is owned and operated by Independence Foundation Trust, which is the charitable trust for the beneficiaries, which are my children.
Yes, I understand that, but I was thinking more along a technical line. I mean, you know, like, you know, what type of mixer board do you have, and what type of CD players you use.
You would be absolutely amazed to learn what makes up this radio station and how good the quality of the sound is, and what makes that quality so good. Will just boggle your mind.
Right.
And maybe I will do a broadcast on that one night. And if there are a lot of micro broadcasters or low-power FM broadcasters out there listening, if they listen to what I have to say, they will significantly increase the quality of their radio station.
You know, that would be very interesting because I am a micro broadcaster. I transmit on 91.1 here in Lakewood, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And my signal doesn't get out that far, but, you know, it's a pretty densely packed population here. So, you know, maybe someone's listening to you tonight on my repeater.
Well, that's great. I'm sure somebody is. We're carried on a lot of micro-broadcasting and low-power FM radio stations all across the country.
What I specifically want to know, though, is do you use computers for any of your radio stations? Certain files, like either MP3s or WAV files, or
no,
you use none of that. It's all manual still.
That's why I get screwed up every once in a while, because I'm doing it. I don't have an engineer. If you go to a real expensive commercial broadcasting station where they spend a lot of money and they got a lot of people working there, you'll see the person on the microphone doesn't do anything.
Oh, yeah.
All he does is talk. Then they have an engineer in another room who's looking through a glass panel, and he has sort of like an intercom with the radio host, so to speak, and he does it all, and so that's his job, and the radio host's job is just to talk. But here, and in so many other, I'm sure yours is the same way, we have to do everything, and we either learn to do it real smoothly and real nice, and occasionally we make mistakes or we screw it up or whatever. But you see, we're not doing this to make money or get ratings. We're doing this to impart information to people who are interested in listening. And that's why criticism of the hour of the time by people who claim that it's not a professional broadcast make me just roll with laughter. It was never intended to be.
Well, it's entertaining and yet informational, and you know, everyone appreciates that.
Well, not everyone. Be careful there, because I know I can name a lot of people who certainly don't.
Who don't what?
Who don't appreciate this broadcast. President Clinton being one.
All the people who tune in because, you know, they've done a lot of the research and have backed you up over the years, can see, you know, that you're the only thing on the air pretty much that you can listen to without going crazy.
Well, that you're the first one that's ever said that. If you were to ask my daughter, she'd tell you that I'm crazy.
Well.
In fact, that seems to be a prerequisite for being a member of this family. You've got to be a little nuts.
Does it run in the family? You could always turn it around on her.
I think it does.
But,
I mean, whoever.
As far as the micro broadcasting goes, like, for instance, mine can go, you know, mine is up and going 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I do nothing. It's just on.
Yeah. But and, but along those lines, I mean, who else would allow his 3-year-old daughter to send him to his room if she felt that he failed in his fatherly duties?
It sounds like a well-run household.
Well, that's the way it works. I know a lot of people think I'm joking when I say that, but I'm not at all. It's the truth.
Well, there is an element of fairness there, and it depends on the transgressions. I mean, I don't know what she could have possibly sent you to the room for, but...
Well, it's not what I say. It's the perception of my daughter that counts. If she failed, if she feels that I failed her in some way as a father, then I have done something wrong, because it's my duty to communicate my fatherly responsibilities and live up to them.
And there's no argument there.
None at all.
On your part, though.
No.
That is quite strange. Okay. Well, keep up the good work, and I'll probably be buying some more tapes.
Okay.
So, have a good evening. Bye.
Thank you for calling. You have to understand, though, folks, that she loves me, so I don't stay there long. And when she ends up going to her room, when the point is made, it's over. We're not trying to torture anybody here. When the point is made, and everybody understands the point, the discipline ends. So many people carry these things to extremes. And it doesn't have to be that way. You have to make a point, and the point must be understood and well received. And once it's done, there's no point in extending it any further. You know, there's a couple of times I've sent my daughter Pooh to her room, and I've told her, you're going to stay there for a week. And about 6 hours later, I go up and we sit down, and we have a little talk, and I let her out. Because the point was made, she understood it, and she's repentant, and we start all over again. And the threat of her staying there a week certainly, you know, has some psychological impact, I'm sure. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Tom. I'm out in California in Yorba Linda, out where you used to live in near Fullerton.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very good. I've been a listener for a long time. Especially when you're on the other station, the signal was a lot better. Tonight it's pretty good on the West Coast. It's not always real good. I listen on a portable Sony walking around the block a lot of times, or I'm also a ham, so I listen to it on my Yaesu once in a while.
Well, that's probably where you get it the best.
Yeah, well, I've got good antennas there, and a lot of it's the noise level, but then I've just finished your book, is it the White Horse or whatever?
Behold a Pale Horse.
I haven't finished it. I'm into the Protocols, which is a different version of what I've read previously.
There's all kinds of versions out there. I tried to find the one that was closest to the original. Of course, it's updated as years go by. You'll find reference to Marx, who lived after they were really written. I've been told since then by people whom I trust to tell me the truth that there's a portion of it missing in there. And if I can find out what portion's missing, I'll include it in my next book.
Well, maybe there's something missing. I wouldn't know one way or the other.
Well, most people wouldn't, and, you know...
I'm retired from the Navy also.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm on the dole with the Navy.
Yes, you certainly are.
And I was riding submarines like you.
What boat were you on?
Well, I was on the Globina, the 362.
Uh-huh.
Spent 3 years on there, and then I was on the submarine tender as I was getting out, and then I was commanding officer of a couple reserve units.
Uh-huh.
When we used to recruit people.
What tender were you on?
The Bushnell down in Key West.
Okay.
We spent a lot of time in Key West. And
Never made it to the Bushnell, but I know her.
Well, you know, I know the Sperry also, having been on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with the Sperry?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, interesting with your background. D. Molay background gave you some background on what was going on in Masonry.
later years. But when I was there, you know, going to these three meetings that I went to, and you know, including my initial initiation, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing or what I was a part of or anything, nothing whatsoever.
Well, you never learn until you read deep. Yeah. I was reading some stuff here.
I was only 13 years old, for God's sake.
Trilogy of books that I had, Scarlet and the Beast. Did you ever read that?
Not only read it, but was one of the initial broadcasts that... that disclosed its reality to the public, and we even sold them for a while with the admonition that that the author intentionally left out a couple of guilty parties, but what he did include in those in that trio of books is really good research.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he left out the two guilty parties, which basically is International Zionism and the Vatican, is because he is he supports at least one of those powers.
So that's but it was a very that was an interesting trilogy. It gave me much more perspective on what was going on.
Oh yes, and he certainly covers.
The average guy with a G on his finger doesn't understand what goes on at the very 33rd at the top. Some of the 33rds, you know.
No, in fact, most of the people who belong to the Masonic Lodge never ever understand what it's all about. Never understand the meaning of the rituals and the symbols. They're there for material gain and for the old boy network that protects them in business and in legal circles.
Mm-hmm. I'm also in the law, but I'm also a practicing attorney, so I know what happens in the court system.
Oh boy. Uh-huh.
And then I'm also retired from the Navy, so I'm an active practitioner in the law, so I see what's...
You know, and until I found out what was going on behind the scenes, and until I watched the changes that were being made in the Navy, I thought the Navy was the greatest thing that there ever was. I loved it. I literally loved it. What it was is if you white, you history. That's what it was.
That's true. But you have a very good perspective on what's going on. Of course, I'm a subscriber to Veritas, and I waited out the long period when you were having some problems here.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I'm glad that you had faith, because I would never, ever let anybody down who ever depended upon me. I
and
just will not
thing,
do it.
And I would say I went in for IRS audit in 1994. Having filed six Schedule C's, and I sailed right through.
Wow, how'd you do that?
Well, I read the book from Nolo Press called The Book the IRS Doesn't Want You to Read.
Oh, I see.
And then I prepared myself.
They don't want us to read anything or hear anything, tell you the truth.
Well, that's what the school system is all about, is the dumbing of America.
Yeah, did you hear the broadcast last night?
I don't think so.
Oh, then you didn't hear about Joe Bannister.
Mm-hmm.
He's a special agent attached to the Criminal Investigation Division of the Internal Revenue Service in Central California, I think around San Bernardino somewhere. And a couple of years ago, some of the people who have been doing the kind of research that I do contacted him and began feeding him information. And he said, okay, I'll do my own research. You know, I don't want you to feed me all this stuff. I want to do my own research. Just what is it that you allege? And they told him. And so he went off and he spent a couple of years researching what they had told him that they believe. And at the end of it, he wrote a 90-page report with his findings. And what he found is that we're all right, 100% correct. But he wanted, really, in his heart, to have the Internal Revenue Service prove that it was wrong. And so he submitted a 90-page report with his sightings of the law and his findings, and asked that the highest up people in the Internal Revenue Service address these issues and provide him with an answer to his report. And guess what they did? They said, we will not be answering your report. We will furnish you with the necessary paperwork to allow you to resign. And so he did, and now he's out of the Internal Revenue Service.
Sounds like the Soviet Union was years ahead of its time.
That's right, and now he is on our side solidly, and he absolutely states with no equivocation whatsoever that there is no law whatsoever that requires any American citizen living within the territorial boundaries of any of the several states of the Union to file and pay income tax.
Well, when I went down to the IRS, there was a woman that weighed about 350 pounds that was going to interview me, and I used a little bit of hyperbole when I went in there. I said, what's a lovely girl like you with the body of an 18-year-old woman doing in a joint like the IRS?
Oh, you're an incredible...
Broadway.
You're an incredible liar.
She said, let's get down to business. Well, at the end of the audit, I owed him nothing, or $350. And then I said, by the way, 2 weeks later, I said, we had a loss carry forward in the office in Santa Ana, and I don't owe you anything. She said, that's right. And I said, by the way, when are you going back to Broadway?
You know, even though she knew you were lying to her, she enjoyed every minute of it. And it's one of the things that...
You can get more with honey than you can with vinegar. You know?
Not only that, it's just the nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that you did that. I am. I like it when people...
Well, what they do is they take a look at all your bank accounts, and I had 12 or 14 of them.
Oh, you have no idea what they do. They come and look at your house. And if they think that your house costs more than what you say it is, and that if they think you're spending more money than you say you are, and that if you've got a brand new Mercedes in your driveway, and if you've got a swimming pool in your backyard, you're not going to pass the audit.
Well, the way to do it is just be driving a clunker and replace the engine once in a while.
No, the way to do it is be honest. Be honest and confront them with the law. And we've all got to start doing that and stop wimping out because we're afraid of these tyrannical bastards, and that's exactly what they are. I'm talking about as an organization, not as individual people.
Well, I think they're basically a collection agency for the Rothschild family.
They are, in fact, a collection agency for the debt service of the United States of America. Not one penny that's paid in income tax ever goes to operate the federal government. Joe Bannister discovered that. That's one of his sites in his 90-page report that they refused to answer.
Well, the whole thing is just a repackaging of what we had in the Roman Empire was bread and circuses for the mobs. And they just repackaged the thing, and they call it the New Frontier or something else. You know?
Well, actually, it's the second plank of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels' Communist Manifesto. Yeah, it's the second plank of the Communist Manifesto.
Exactly right.
Being implemented unconstitutionally, unlawfully, and illegally against the citizens of the several states. It applies, actually, only to excisable activities and only to those people practicing those excisable activities within the Federal District of Columbia, enclaves, territories, dockyards, forts, etc.
So the people that are paying, Barnum was years ahead of his time then.
There's a sucker born every minute. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Barnum corollary is once a sucker, always a sucker, so you got to keep piling.
Yeah. Well, that's because you don't want to admit that you're a sucker.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than admit that you're a sucker, you'll continue to pay the tribute and be a sucker. Because to admit it somehow is unconscionable to the sheeple of the world. To me, it's unconscionable not to admit it. Before I could arrive at this state today where I'm doing what I'm doing, I had to go in my bathroom, I had to look myself in the mirror, and I had to tell myself, and I had to mean it and understand it, you have been stupid and ignorant all your life, and it's got to stop now. I did that, actually. And I could not have proceeded any further if I had not done it.
Well, you bounced back quite a bit from the day you told the station manager, whatever his name, McLeod or whatever it is, to shove it someplace.
Well, I had to tell him that. He was dishonest with me.
I
left WWCR and gave up 10 million listeners minimum simply because they had lied to me.
Mm-hmm.
I am a man of principle, And I will do that for a principle rather than choose the lesser of two evils and keep a 10 million listener audience.
Well, I appreciate you, that you're not a lapdog.
Well, nobody should be.
For those people.
Nobody should be. We all have to have principles. Like I said in my book, a man or a woman without principles that they are ready and willing to die for at any given moment that they are called upon to do so are already dead and are of no use or consequence to anyone, not even themselves.
Well, is there any potential clients that are running for president that might be on our side?
Not yet, but we're looking.
We're looking for one.
Don't be conned by Pat Buchanan.
You've got the Skull and Bones people and 33rds all over the place, right?
Yep.
Tweedledum or Tweedledee? I think you pretty well clarified the situation with Dole's running mate, Kemp.
Uh-huh.
You know, his association, and also, of course, Clinton, he was the Mole Man of the Year years ago.
He sure was. And I got to tell you something else. Nobody rises to be governor of any southern state if they're not a member, highly degreed, of one of the secret societies that are prominent in the South.
Well, they wouldn't have got that war started if it hadn't been for Masonry.
Well, you got to, that's right.
Secretary of the Confederacy, Benjamin Judah, was a Rothschild agent, and if he didn't like him, then John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah.
Either Tweedledum or Tweedledee is when President Lincoln told him to shove it when they tried to borrow money at 14% to 16%.
Well, that's why they killed him.
And then he let the printing presses run, and he made the mistake of going to the theater.
That's why they killed him. He wouldn't buy in to their extortion, and he wouldn't allow the country to be divided so that England could once again gather up the colonies under her fold.
So they didn't need to, they're always talking about whether Clinton's going to leave the Kennedy way or he's going to leave the Nixon way. You know, it's possible he'll be leaving before the next election.
Well, the Senate, the House of Representatives did their job. The Senate wimped out.
Well, the Senate is a little more of an old boys club.
That's baloney. They're elected by the people in their states.
Mm-hmm.
They're no different than the House of Representatives at all. They used to be. When they were appointed by the legislature of the states.
Sure, wasn't the sort of a trial where you listen to the evidence and weigh it on the evidence. I think it was all politically biased.
It was a scam from the word go. Scam from the word go.
You know, if you were...
Senate had no intention of legitimately trying President Clinton. That was not a trial. It was a joke. It was a total joke.
What's that?
It was a joke. And anybody who votes for these clowns is also a joke, in my estimation. Listen, I got to let you go and get somebody else in here.
Anyway, have a super evening.
Thank you.
Keep the faith there.
Well, if I didn't have any faith, I certainly wouldn't be doing this.
All right. Take care of it, Phil.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. 520-333-4577. You got to have a lot of faith to do what I do, folks. You certainly do. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Bill. How are you this evening?
I'm fine.
Can I ask you something about Art Bell tonight?
Sure. Go ahead.
He's been referring to someone on his show that was attacking him on a...
I talked about that last night. It's not me.
Oh, okay. I missed just the first few minutes last night, and I was wondering, was that...
Well, all you have to do is listen to what he said. He said that the people who he is attacking and blaming Richard Hoagland's heart attack upon...
Yes.
Has been attacking Richard Hoagland steadily in their broadcast for the last few weeks.
Yes.
And has had a guest on their show that has been practicing character assassination against Richard Hoagland for the past several weeks.
I didn't hear the part about the guest. I heard you mention that guy once. It's on
his website. Have I even mentioned Richard Hoagland's name in the last several weeks?
Not in the last several weeks. I just heard.
Not even once. Have I ever attacked Richard Hoagland's character, ever?
I heard you call him a character assassin, call him Hoaxland one night. But,
yes, but I'm talking about what he is promoting, not him as a person. I have never attacked Richard Hoaxland's character. So it cannot possibly be me.
Well, that's good, because he was referring to that person as a self-admitted liar. And
No, he's talking about the guest that was on that broadcast. Apparently you don't listen very well.
I'm sorry?
Apparently you don't listen very well. You didn't hear what Art Bell said. He was talking about the guest that appeared on the radio show that he is criticizing as having admitted that he's a liar. Have I ever admitted in my entire life that I'm a liar?
No, that's what...
Then how in the world could you call me and even confuse me or even believe or begin to believe that he was talking about me?
Well, I thought he was just trying to spread that stuff.
Nope, my friend, the truth is you did not think at all. That's the truth. You weren't listening to what he said, and you certainly weren't thinking, were you?
I was about half listening to his show. I was on a lunch break.
Hey, you can make all the excuses in the world that you want, but until you go into the bathroom and look yourself in the mirror and be able to admit the truth to yourself, you're never going to get anywhere.
Can you give me a little education on the origin of the terms right wing and left wing? I haven't been able to.
I don't know where the origin came from. There is no such thing, really.
Seems like you hear it all the time, and I know what they try to infer with those.
It doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't mean a thing today. It's another method of attempting to divide the people. True Americans want less government and the maximum amount of freedom with responsibility. People who don't want that want more government and more laws and more control and more restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't matter what you call yourself or what you call these people.
Yeah, I just was curious as to where that originated. Because
I have no idea. It's not legitimate at all. The concept that somebody like Hitler could be right-wing and somebody like Stalin could be left-wing is the most ridiculous thing that has ever been proposed that I've ever heard, because they're both the same people doing the same things to the same group of population that they rule. Hitler was a socialist. So was Stalin. How could one be right wing and one be left wing? It's a scam. It's a lie.
Okay, Bill, thanks for the information, and good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. 520-333-4578. You know, when I'm a little tough like that, I don't mean it personally. I'm trying to convince the entire listening audience, not just the caller, that they need to begin to use their brain and listen carefully and think about what they're hearing and what they're saying. If people don't learn to do that, then what in the hell are you interested in changing anything for? Because if you don't learn to do that, you're just going to let it all fall back into the same crap that we're in now. Don't you know that? 520-333-4578 is the number.
Everybody always picking on me.
That's him on his knee. I know that's him. Getting 7-11 down in the boy's gym. Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown. He's a clown. That Charlie Brown. He's gonna get tough. Just you wait and see.
Why's everybody always picking on me?
Who's always writing on the wall? Always pooping in the hall.
Hey, what's up?
He's a clown.
Yeah, it is. Hold on, we're playing music right now.
Okay.
As we get through with the music, I'll
get out of here. Everybody always picking on me.
Oh, good. Hold on.
You bet. I'll be here.
Why is everybody always picking on me?
Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. This is Cooper. This is Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Out here in the Ozark Hills.
We talked late last night, didn't we?
You bet. I talked to you, and I was very, very well pleased to be able to get you. What I am calling about, my son got your early broadcast about this. I want to get your catalog and tape or whatever it is. And the size of the envelope, you say, with a 77-cent stamp on it. Now, is that a large, real large envelope?
Yeah, about an 8x10 envelope, because we're going to slide a whole bunch of stuff in there, and we're going to send it right back to you.
Because there is a small white and a large white.
No, get one of those big...
It'll be a brown envelope.
Get one of those brown 8x10 or
right.
8x11 envelopes,
okay.
You know, that we can slide regular pages of paper into.
Yeah.
We're going to slide a whole bunch of those in there and send them right back to you.
Good. What I'll do is I'll get a larger envelope, put that one in it, and mail it to you.
That's fine. Or you can fold it up and mail it in just a regular envelope if you want to.
Oh, I see.
You can do it any way you want, as long as we get it with
77 cents.
And stamps.
Put in it, I request your catalog. And, you know, we want to get a lot of your different...
Well, this is the time to do it because we only do this sale once a year, and I don't think we even did it last year. So we skipped a whole year on this.
It doesn't matter about the price. I pay the regular price. It doesn't matter.
Boy, you're unusual.
No, I'm just an old, old man. I'm almost 90 years old, Mr. Cooper.
Well, we talked about that. And you know what? We talked about what was taught in school. When you were going to regular elementary school and then high school.
Would it be okay? See, I'm a mechanical engineer,
uh-huh.
Retired. My dad was civil engineer. And what I want to talk to, and to you, and to my fellow Americans, and I love America. I am strictly American. And I wish that some people out there who don't realize what they have will just listen to me for a few minutes.
You have the microphone. Go to it.
No. I want them to know I was born in the year 1911. Now, I've seen a lot of things happen this century. They must admit that. My folks came here from Europe in the 1800s, in the later 1800s. My dad was from Hungary, and my mom was from Czechoslovakia. Now, they were so thrilled to get here that they instilled in me they told me what it was like from the country that, and when they left Europe, Hungary was an empire. It was Austro-Hungarian Empire. Perhaps have you, it didn't, a lot of people never even heard of it.
Yes, I've studied that history.
There was an Austro-Hungarian Empire, and they were quite powerful. they extended all the way down to the Adriatic, the Mediterranean, and clear into Czechoslovakia, Bosnia. All these countries that are now in trouble were all part of that empire. But it was an empire, the same as the United States was when it was a colony. It was part of an empire, which was Great Britain. And Great Britain, the slogan was, the sun never set on the great British Empire. You recall that?
Yes, I certainly do.
Slogan. Okay. Now, when my folks got here to the United States, that was the dream that they dreamed of. Now, my dad's people, they weren't just ordinary peasants or slaves or whatever you think. My dad's people, my grandfather was an engineer on the Orient Express that went over to Turkey and these countries, and also they had a run from Hamburg, Germany, through Budapest and up in through the Siberia into Moscow. So he traveled. That was my grandfather. And on my mother's side, her father was a miller. He ground the wheat for all the farmers in the area there, and he was the miller, and he was not particularly looked upon as a slouch. He was a very important man. So the background of my people, my folks, when they came, they weren't really considered as escaping because they were poor. They were escaping because they were looking for freedom, which they didn't have under the empire. When they got here, of course, they were thrilled, and they loved America, and they instilled upon, there were six kids in the siblings. I'm one of the last ones left of the siblings, but my folks are, of course, they're gone, and they instilled this freedom in me, and I can't think of anything else, but the greatest thing I have is that nobody owns me, and there is no government was here that who considered you to do what they wanted you to do. We tell the government what to do. Now, this is fading away, and it frightens me. Now, when I went to school, I was born in Manhattan Island, in New York, in the city of New York, and right in the middle of Manhattan Island, by the way. The location was, if there are people there who know of Manhattan, I was born on 86th Street, the east side, on what was called the East River, where we were located, we lived, and I was between two parks, Central Park and Carl Schurz Park. That was my playground where I played. And I went to school right there, public school. Now, I would like, I don't want to take up too much time. I will call you later a few times whenever I have, if you don't mind. I want to express one thing at this evening. I want to tell them, the people, my fellow Americans, true Americans, patriots who love America. I'm talking to you folks. I went to school in New York City. When we went to class, I'm talking about the early 1920s, when it was even during World War I in 1918, I was old enough to go to kindergarten. When I went to school, the first thing we did, the principal would appear on, there was sort of a stage up front, and the classrooms in the auditorium we had in school were revolving doors. And I was a mother that helped push those doors open. We pushed all the doors open, and it became one great big auditorium. Now, of course, when these doors were closed, they all became classrooms. So it was a convenient way to have the auditorium there and still use it as classrooms. Now, the first agenda on the program, this was every morning when we went to school. The principal was up on the stage up in front. And the first thing, this was a lady principal, the first thing she did, she would read a passage from the Bible. And after the passage from the Bible, we sang God Bless, not God Bless America, but we sang America the Beautiful, or one of these patriotic type songs, or a hymn, which the teacher played the piano, and we just sang all that. And then she would read some passages from the Bible, and we'd all listen and pay attention to it. And after it was all done, it was over, and we had to sing a hymn to close the session. And that was every morning. This was instilled, and I remember it to this day. Then, of course, the rooms were closed, and we went back into study. And in the studies, one of the curriculum classes was called the civics class. I don't even hear them mention that now. And in civics, we were taught, first of all, the Constitution of the United States. We went through the different parts of it, and the Bill of Rights. And this was taught to us as a child in the second and third grade in school. And it's with me yet, and I'm almost 90 years old. And I still think that was the most wonderful time of my life, to learn about America, about the freedom here. People don't realize what freedom means. Freedom means nobody is your boss. Nobody owns you. The only one you pay homage to is our Lord Jesus Christ and God. He gives the laws, and you follow them. And when you give those rights up, you have given up everything, because you give your soul over to Satan. And that's what's happening. I'm afraid to say that's what's happening. I see it all around me, and I feel so sorry for the young. The young kids, look what's happening to them. Folks, you folks, if I may, Mr. Cooper, interrupt right at this point and talk directly to my fellow Americans who have children. Do you realize what is happening to the children? Right here in the Ozarks, in the middle of America, in a school that I know of, very near, not far from where I am, a child was caught out in the yard during the recess hour, and she was caught looking into a little book, which happened to be a Holy Bible, reading it. She was, so I put it bluntly, she was caught reading a Bible. Do you know what they did? They made such a fuss over that. It was absolutely banned. She was not allowed, she was told she was not allowed to bring that book in anymore. And her parents were called in. They made such a fuss out of it that it turned my stomach. Now, folks, go into your classrooms where your children are, where they are being taught. I was being taught. thought, what a great, wonderful land we live in. America, the land of the free, the home of the brave. If you mention that today in school, you would be ostracized. Believe me. They would call you into court and find some kind of offenses you have made. That's enough. I can't talk much more about it. But for the sake of the children, you folks who have children in school, go to school. Find out what they're teaching the children. Make sure you know what they're teaching the children. And if you don't think it's right, if it's not according to the laws established and given to us by our Lord Jesus and our good Savior, and, of course, the greatest God there ever is and ever will be, if they're not teaching the children to obey those laws, you will be very, very sorry, and the children will, well, they're gone. It's terrible what's happening to them now, but you have no idea what the end will be. And Mr. Cooper?
Yes, sir.
All I want to say is, if the people, the real Americans, the true Americans who love America, don't put up a fight, don't stop what's going on, and don't refuse to obey the laws of Satan, which are the New World Order, the 666, and all those horrible things. Go back to the good old saying of America, the land of the free and the home of the brave. Stick with it. And if they don't follow it your way, read the Constitution. How many of you know what the Constitution is? Tell me. I carry one around with me in my pocket.
So do I.
Just a small little book it is. And in it is the entire Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and I read that whenever I have a few minutes, I read it. And I read about Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry and our fathers who created the United States, they gave up their land, they gave up their wealth, they gave up everything to give us America and to chase
And many of them gave up their lives.
They gave up their lives. Well, Patrick Henry did, didn't he? Give me liberty or give me death, he told them.
Yes.
And they hung him. They did. But he didn't. He didn't back off at all.
No.
And the patriots at Concord, they came out and they faced the British, who had the Hessians and the British troops. Now, Britain at the time was the greatest power on the face of the earth. It was an empire. And the king of England at the time, he was the most powerful man on earth. But these patriots at Concord came out with their rifles and they stood up in front of these and fired at them. Can you imagine what guts that took to do that? They faced the greatest power on earth, a handful of men. And don't you think we can bring America back?
Sure we can.
We have millions of men here. I know lots of them. As a matter of fact, during my active life, I, of course, am a mechanical engineer. And I don't want to take up too much time, but I will talk to
you and
my American compatriots out there from time to time.
You know, we're out of time.
I'm allowed to do that.
We're out of time, as a matter of fact.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will say so long for now, and God bless America, and God bless all of you out there, all all of my American friends, and God bless you, Mr. Cooper, and your family.
Well, thank you.
Keep up the good work. I'm on your side. A little old, maybe, but I will stand up against it. And if any of it, I would do exactly the same thing that Patrick Henry did. Give me liberty or give me death. I will not live under any of this tyranny. And God bless you all, and I'll see you again.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. And I will say good night for now. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you for your call.
You bet.
And you're always welcome to call back. Well, you've heard from one of our senior citizens. I happen to know how old he is, and when he says he's almost 90, he's telling you the truth. He's 89 years old, and he will be 90 next year, or maybe even this year, as a matter of fact. But, ladies and gentlemen, you may not agree with everything he said, and I don't agree with every single thing he said, especially regarding religion. Even though I am a Christian, I do not believe in shoving my religion down anybody else's throat. I will tell you this. When he talks about God's law, he's talking about the Ten Commandments. I have never met anyone in my life who could ever criticize the validity of the Ten Commandments. And he is absolutely 100% correct that if we do not obey the Ten Commandments, we are going to suffer tremendously. I don't care if you believe in God or you don't believe in God or you believe in a different God or what. But I think that his discourse on his experience in all of those years is a fitting end to tonight's broadcast. Good night, folks. And God bless each and every single one of you. Well, you see, that's one of those things. When you engineer your own broadcast. Apparently, when I hit the pause button, I did not wait for the absolute end of the last record that we played. And so, therefore, it's got to spin around and select another entry and queue up. And before we can have music that shuffles us off to wherever we're all collectively going. Or individually going. Or maybe not even going at all. But that's what's happening right now. I'm just waiting for it to come up on the machine. And when that happens...
If I don't love you, baby...
Oh, yeah.
Bricks ain't grocery, eggs ain't poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man. And run through the jungle fighting lions with the Swiss, because you know I love you, baby. Oh, you know I love you, baby, yeah. Now, if I don't love you, baby, I tell you, Swiss ain't grocery, it ain't poultry, and Mona Lisa was a man. Home with me, you better run into me, baby, and be convinced.